You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome to a Wednesday, everyone. I'm Nicole Sandler of RadioOrNot.com, in for Tom Hartman today. And boy, do we have a great show for you. There's so much to talk about from, the debates, because we're right smack in the middle of them. Still recovering from the first presidential debate. And, of course, it's the eve of the one and only vice presidential debate. So we'll get to there. Along the lines of what they didn't talk about that they should have the other day. And a couple of other issues that I think are important to discuss on this 10th of October. We're going to start really with one of the issues that they didn't discuss last Wednesday night. You know, the first presidential debate was supposed to be all about domestic issues. And, we know that Jim Lehrer didn't do a very good job. Really, what they discussed during that 90-minute long debate on domestic issues were taxes and spending and health care. But they left out LGBT issues. They left out veterans affairs. They left out labor, civil liberties, the environment, poverty, which is huge, and we'll get to that later on in the program. And they left out women's issues. Now, as much as the Republican Party wants to claim that there is no war on women, as a card-carrying member of the female gender, I disagree. In fact, there have been jokes about the fact that the Republican Party wants to take us back to the 50s, the 1850s, that is, and I can't say I disagree. And I was really stunned not only that Jim Lehrer didn't bring up the subject, but that President Obama didn't either. So I want to start this hour by asking, what do Meryl Streep, Sarah Silverman, Amy Poehler, Kyra Sedgwick, and Kevin Bacon, and a bunch of others all have in common? Giving you a second to think about it. They're all involved in a new campaign called Draw the Line. In fact, Shano, you've got that Meryl Streep audio there, don't you? Can you just hit that for a moment?
We've got to do something right now, you and me, all of us. Every day, the opponents of our fundamental reproductive rights are passing laws designed to take those rights away. They're shutting down doctors and clinics across the nation. They're making it nearly impossible for millions of women to get the essential health care they need. And have you even heard some of the things they're saying about us? I mean, it would make Sarah Silverman blush.
And there's a little shot of
Sarah Silverman. Enough
is
enough. It's time to draw the line. It's time to put the president, the Congress, lawmakers across the United States on notice. We're not going to stand for this anymore. Sign the Bill of Reproductive Rights and pass it on. Or scroll down to see what could happen if we don't draw the line now.
So that's a video that's on the homepage of a new website, drawtheline.org. And what they have put together, the Center for Reproductive Rights, is I've got to punch her in, don't I? Is a Bill of Rights, let's go to the phones and talk with Nancy Northrup. She's the president and the CEO of the Center for Reproductive Rights. Nancy, thanks for joining me today on the Tom Hartman Show.
Nicole, thank you for having me on.
Well, I love what you've done. I came across the website just yesterday. I think it just launched yesterday, didn't it?
Absolutely. We just put it up yesterday, and we've had over 27,000 people sign so far.
Wow. So you've written the Bill of Reproductive Rights. I shouldn't say you. Who came up with this?
Well, at the Center for Reproductive Rights, we thought about what are the fundamental freedoms that we want to have affirmed. Mm-hmm. And so the Bill of Reproductive Rights reflects that, but it's something that reflects the global human rights movement's articulation of reproductive rights. So it's about the right to make our own decisions about our reproductive health and future. The right to a full range of safe, affordable, and readily accessible reproductive health care, and the right to be free from discrimination. So three very simple concepts: decision-making, accessibility and affordability, and non-discrimination.
I'm looking on the website, and I signed, and you scroll down, and you see it's a beautifully put together site. And it says, "We the people of the United States hereby assert the following as fundamental human rights that no government may deny and that our governments at every level must guarantee and safeguard for all." And what is it, a long list of things? Is it, tell us what's in the bill.
Well, the bill is these very three basic concepts: the right to make our own decisions about reproductive health care, mm-hmm. the right to a full range of affordable and accessible health care, and that means not just access to abortion services, but pregnancy care, preventive services, contraception, fertility treatment,
right,
and the right to non-discrimination. So the idea that the issue about getting reproductive health care services is about women and their doctors and getting the affordable care that they need. It's not about government stepping in and imposing their ideas on women.
Now, I'm guessing that the Center for Reproductive Rights is a nonpartisan organization.
Absolutely.
But you can't deny the fact that we're seeing this weird return to the certainly what weren't the good old days. All we have to do really is point to Todd Akin, who talks about legitimate rape as if there is such a thing, and talks about, and look at somebody like Paul Ryan, who, with Paul Akin, put forth this personhood bill, which would outlaw really any type of abortion because it says that a fertilized egg has the same rights as any living, breathing human being. Things like that, which, is there any place for that in the year 2012?
Well, I would say absolutely not. And what we saw in 2012, what we saw in 2011, was an absolute avalanche of laws restricting women's access to reproductive health services. In 2011, there were more than 60 laws damaging women's access to reproductive health care, passed in 24 states. This is an unprecedented assault. This year, we're seeing a whole nother wave of restrictions. And so what we, and it's, you mentioned before, the Center for Reproductive Rights is a nonpartisan organization. Mm-hmm. Our goal is to get reproductive health care out of politics. Our goal is to ensure that women's access to reproductive health care is protected as a fundamental right. And that means that politicians can come and go, but women's access to reproductive health care will not come and go with them. So we feel that in this campaign, this Draw the Line campaign, it's really important for everybody to step up and say, we agree with these principles. We do not want infringement on our reproductive health care. We want our rights protected. And then we will use this to talk to policymakers about the fact that they need to stop and draw the line and stand up for women.
You know, we're speaking with Nancy Northrup. She's the president and CEO of the Center for Reproductive Rights, who just yesterday launched a new website, a new campaign, drawtheline.org. Were you as surprised as I was that in the healthcare hearings, one of the provisions of Obamacare was that that women would have access to oral contraceptives for no copay as part of, it's a good preventive measure, I think. And Sandra Fluck, when she tried to speak up, was vilified by the right. Can you shine any light on why they're doing this? Aren't women a big part of the voting public?
Well, I think, unfortunately, it reflects the real ideological extremes of the anti-choice movement. We have said for years that it's not just about access to abortion services. It is also about access to contraception. And when you look at the personhood laws that you mentioned before, like the one that tried to get on the ballot was on the ballot in Mississippi last mm-hmm. year, these would also affect, access to IVF. So you're really talking about a very right-wing assault mm-hmm. on women's reproductive health care. So is it shocking that we're talking about access to contraception in 2012? Yes, it is. But that is why the vast majority who stand with women, who want to see reproductive health care as part of everyone's
Draw the line.
Life.
This is the Thank Tom you. Hartman Thank you, Nancy. Program. Nancy Northrup, Center for Reproductive Rights, the website drawtheline.org. We'll take a break, come back with your calls at 866-987-TOM.
I am strong. I am
I guess that's the theme song for this hour. I am woman. I am Nicole Sandler of RadioOrNot.com in for Tom Hartman today. And we started the show with a brief chat with Nancy Northrup of the Center for Reproductive Rights. And they do some really great work over there. But I wanted to focus in on this new website, this new campaign that they launched yesterday called Draw the Line. And the website is drawtheline.org. And they've put together a bill of reproductive rights. You know, I was really a little perturbed might be the word, that in the first presidential debate that was supposed to be all about domestic issues, there were so many things they didn't touch on. I mean, they just basically scratched the surface on domestic policy, from taxes and spending to health care. And of course, you know, it felt like we were in opposite world, because the things that Mitt Romney said were nothing we had ever heard from him before, at least not since he's been running for president. And Obama didn't do so great either. So, there were, as I mentioned at the top, there were a bunch of issues under the heading of domestic policy that they didn't get to, including women's issues. And not only are our reproductive rights, at risk, the fact is today's Republican Party wants to make sure that women don't have easy access to birth control, that they don't have access to safe, legal abortions, that I don't know, they just want to make it tougher for us to get by in life. In addition to the fact that they didn't deal with women's rights, they didn't deal with labor, organized labor, as again, organized labor in this country has come under attack by the Republican Party. All you have to do is look at Wisconsin, look at Ohio, look at, look at teachers and firefighters and police officers. They didn't touch on civil liberties, which I hate to say, this president hasn't been great on either. They didn't touch on the environment, and we're looking at massive global climate change. They didn't touch on the LGBT issues. And I got to say, if any one group has made great progress under President Obama, it's been in the area of gay rights. Look, Don't Ask, Don't Tell has been repealed. Marriage equality is gaining traction and now is favored by the majority of the people in this country. That's good. That's great. But, we still don't have an Equal Rights Amendment in this nation. We do have the first vice presidential debate coming up tomorrow night. And I don't think, because there is only one, I don't think there's any limits on, it's only domestic questions. It's a little bit of everything. And I got to say, one thing I'm very happy about is what I think is going to be the best moderator of all the debates. Martha Raddatz is the moderator for tomorrow night. So I am looking forward to that one. I think Joe Biden's going to do really well. I think Paul Ryan often comes across as sort of a snot-nosed kid, if you know what I mean. You know, just like when Chris Wallace was trying to press him a couple of weeks ago on their tax plan, and Paul Ryan was like, I don't have time. That's something I'd expect from my 13-year-old daughter, who I hope is no longer in the car listening. Not from a congressman and vice presidential candidate. So, we'll see what happens tomorrow night. It should be interesting. I want to open up the phone lines for you. The number is 866-987-TOM, 866-987-8466, and see what's on your mind. I'm bummed. There was a guy who was on hold who wanted to either defend Todd Akin's legitimate rape comment or try to explain it to me. I would have loved to hear that, but I guess he chickened out. Call back in. I'd love to take your call. But let's start in Cleveland and talk to Dave. Hi, Dave. You're on the Tom Hartman Show with Nicole Sandler.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
Hey, I just wanted to warn everybody out there. The Republicans are really good at preparing for debates. They're going to have Ryan polished. They're going to have him fed all the lines. He's going to be spewing lies, but they're going to be spewed with confidence, with a smile on his face, with authority, and it's going to be really hard to combat just a barrage of lies. That's the problem, and people are just going to have to wake up and realize it when they see it.
Right. Well, the problem is that, the people, look, we know that Mitt Romney spewed a barrage of lies, too. And look, his bounce is already coming down in the polls. So that's a good thing. The problem is the people who are predisposed to want to vote for Romney and Ryan aren't going to believe you or me when we tell them that they were lying. And if all they're watching is Fox, what I, lovingly refer to as the fake news channel, then they're not going to hear that anyway. So, it's the media has this horrible echo chamber effect that, they either perpetuate the lies or they don't point them out. And because the news isn't the news anymore, it's very polarized. It's either right-leaning or left-leaning, and there's a hell of a lot more right-leaning than there is left-leaning. People are, all they're getting is something to reinforce their positions, which in many cases are already wrong. We have to hope some people pick up a newspaper and actually see what's right. The only good thing, I think, in countering to what you're saying about how Paul Ryan will do, is that Joe Biden is pretty good at this. He's been running for office for many, many, many years. Yeah, he's up there in age. And so he's been through a lot of debates. And he can counter Paul Ryan's lies with facts and deliver them with a smile on his face. I think Joe Biden's going to do really well tomorrow night. So anyway, that's what I think. More of your calls coming up on the other side of the break. I am Nicole Sandler of RadioOrNot.com in for Tom Hartman, and I'm doing the show from a friend's studio. And I've got a little problem that I'm hoping you can help me out with, because in her front lawn, she's got a Romney Ryan lawn sign. Yeah, I think we all run into this. We'll talk about that when we come back. Don't go away. Nicole in for Tom.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Yeah, she says she agrees with me on most things, except the economy in Israel? Yeah, but that doesn't make sense. We'll talk about it next.
And I don't need
All right. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Show for this Wednesday, the 10th of October. I'm Nicole Sandler of RadioOrNot.com. Really happy to be in for Tom. I had the chance to fill in for him a few years ago. Actually, Tom Hartman gave me my first chance to fill in on national radio. I had been doing a morning show here in South Florida on the then Progressive Talk Station. And when they unceremoniously let me go in advance of a flip to sports, because Miami needed a fifth sports talk station, instead of one progressive talk station. Tom invited me to guest host his show on Air America Radio back then, and the rest is history. I do my show online at RadioOrNot.com Monday through Thursday mornings, and I do it from my home studio. And I used to have what's known as an ISDN line, a broadcast line, into my house so that I could fill in for Tom, as I did on occasion, or Randy Rhodes, as I do quite a bit. But a while back, I disconnected the line because, honestly, it gets expensive, and without steady work, I couldn't afford it. And so when I got the call yesterday to come in and fill in for Tom, I had to scramble to find a studio. So I called a friend of mine. Her name is Mindy Bayer. I'll give her name. And she does voiceover work. You hear her voice in a lot of radio and TV commercials. And she's got this wonderful home studio. And I told her what was going on. And she's like, sure, come on over. Use it. I'm happy to have you. And it was a wonderful thing, for her to do. But before we hung up, she's like, Nicole, but I got to tell you something. When you drive up to my house, you're going to see a Romney Ryan lawn sign and you can't touch it. Not that I would anyway. I mean, come on, it's all right. She almost quickly said, I'm sure I agree with you on most things, but on Israel and the economy, I got to go with Romney. And I said, it took me aback, and I said, Obama is very pro-Israel. And she was like, no, and she did like a kid would do and covered her ears because she didn't want to hear it. And I said, you know what? Not going to go there. I so appreciate the use of the studio because I'll be here, for the rest of the week. And this is a big deal. She's letting me in her home and using her studio, and I'm not going to argue with her. But here's the deal. We are less than 4 weeks out from Election Day. A lot of people are already voting. This is the time that we are going to encounter those friends and those, you know, family members who say things like that. You know, look, we can disagree on what's going to happen with the economy. I think we are on the right track. I think we were left by George W. Bush with such a mess that, you know, as Bill Clinton said at the convention, no one, not me, not any president, could have pulled us out of that, you know, that disaster in this short a time. But we are getting there. You know, all you have to do is look at that bikini jobs graph with, you know, when Obama came in, we were hemorrhaging 800,000 jobs a month, and slowly but surely it went into positive territory. And yeah, we're doing better. Is it going as fast as we would like? No, but we're going in the right direction. I certainly don't want to return to the policies of George W. Bush that got us into this mess in the first place. And you know, I guess that's, if we were going to have that discussion, that's what I would say to her. But here's the question for you. Are you getting, you know, the emails, the pushback from friends and family? Are you having these discussions? Do you go to a friend's house and see a Romney Ryan sign in the lawn? And what do you say to them? Because, you know, this is the kind of thing maybe we should rehearse. We should practice, because this is what we are up against for the next almost 4 weeks. As I keep asking, is it November 7th yet? All right, let's go to the phones and see what you have to say. We'll start with, oh, the Defend Aiken legitimate rape caller is back. Okay, Rich is in Houston, Texas, listening on Sirius Radio. Rich, thanks for calling back.
I appreciate the time of the call. When Aiken said about the legitimate rape comment, or when he made that comment, you know, in politics today, unfortunately, with all the media out there and people trying to sell advertisements, anything that a politician says, or a lot of times, is going to be dissected. So, and it's going to be turned against them. But
yeah,
getting back to the point on rape, what is statutory rape? Can you define that for me?
Yeah, statutory rape is it could be either real rape, you know, rape against a violent rape, or it could be sex with a minor who is not of age to make that decision on whether or not they should be engaging in sexual behavior.
Yeah. So that's what I think really what Aiken was trying to say is.
No, he wasn't saying that at all. He was saying that if somebody is being, I guess, violently raped or forcibly. I think this is what you're trying to say. Aiken and Paul Ryan, by the way, tried to introduce the term forcible rape into legislation. I think this is, you know, maybe Aiken was searching for the word forcible and he couldn't find it, because we all have those brain farts every once in a while. And
okay,
and so he said legitimate instead of forcible. I'm sorry. It's still wrong. But his entire premise, this is a man who wants to be a U.S. senator, and he's still believing
in this.
This
today, there's zero tolerance for slip-ups.
Well, it's not only that. You know what? If it was only that, but this theory that he was trying to perpetuate was debunked decades ago, that if a woman is being violently raped, hold on, I'm going to let you finish, that her body shuts it down and she can't get pregnant? I mean, what is he reading? Medical journal? Well, that's what he was saying.
Scientifically, that could be proven.
No, it can't be proven. No, it cannot be proven, and that's the problem. You know what? I'll forgive him using the wrong word, but the fact is he used that wrong word in trying to say that if a woman is being forcibly raped, that she won't get pregnant because her body will shut that kind of stuff down.
You know, when I say, I think, you know, statutory rape, unfortunately, there's people out there that, hey, if there's a 20-year-old guy and he's dating a 16-year-old girl.
Yeah, but that's not what we're talking about.
All right, and that's where I thought he was trying to differentiate. But,
yeah, no, but he used the word legitimate rape instead of forcible rape, I guess. But the thing, he was using it in the context of trying to say that if she's really being forcibly raped, that she's not going to get pregnant because her body will shut it down. Well, no. And sorry, somebody who is that idiotic does not belong in the U.S.
Yeah, I'd like to say that at that point, a doctor would be able to clarify that. So.
Well, doctors, anyway. Thank you, Todd. Thank you. Yes, doctors have clarified that, actually, and they've said, no, that was a theory from, you know, what, the 1800s, which, again, is where the Republican Party would like to take us, I suppose. All right. Logan is in New York City listening on WWRL. Hi, Logan. You're on the Tom Hartman Show.
Hey, it's good to talk to you. I think what you should tell your friend is that we don't like the Bain treatment. That's what the Republicans keep giving us. I mean, if you look at what Romney did to companies, he loaded it up with debt and gave all the money to the rich guys.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what Republicans do every time they come into office, to give us the Bain treatment. So why would she want that again?
You know what? I'm not going to argue with her on this right now. I'll wait until Friday, and maybe after the show Friday we'll have the conversation, because look, I'm a guest in her home. She's letting me use her studio. But I'll tell you something else that's really disconcerting. Driving through this neighborhood, and let me just say, it is a really nice gated community, beautiful, big, gorgeous homes. I saw only Romney Ryan signs. Hey, Obama campaign. And I asked her about it. I said, it looks like all your neighbors have the Romney sign. She said, I think that they just haven't distributed the Obama signs, because she said most everybody I know is voting for Obama, except all these houses around here that I saw those Romney signs. I'm wondering where Obama for America is here. I'm in South Florida, by the way, if they just haven't distributed the signs, but they need to get a presence out here.
Well, can I also say that I really want the Democrats to start running ads about voter suppression. I mean, they should really make this election a referendum on voter suppression. This is just getting maddening.
The Democrats, unfortunately, I think have less money in their coffers than the Republicans have, and they need to run ads for their candidates. There are some third party ads out there talking about the fact that the Republicans do not want you to vote. And again, this is nothing new. I mean, one thing the Republicans do is they play the long game. And this has been a strategy for a long, 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 long time. In fact, I'm drawing a blank on his name. The guy who was the founder of
Paul Weyrich.
Paul Weyrich, right, who said, the goo-goo syndrome, good government syndrome, we don't want people to vote. They don't want you to vote. And that was, that was 3 decades ago. So this has been in the works for a long, long time. And they're pretty good at it.
Well, it's because the demographics are killing them. I mean, they can't survive with this demographic shift. They have to do something. But this is their last chance, this election.
Well, and funny, they've got the worst candidates than ever in my recent memory, because the Republicans are going further and further into nut job territory. Not only conservative, but look, I don't think George Bush was fiscally conservative by any means. They use the term conservative, but it doesn't really mean conservative. They're just naysayers.
Well, they have the perfect squishy guy to run, because he can be anything to anyone at any moment. And it seems to be kind of working, because, they take him as some kind of moderate, because he has no position at all.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I'm on Twitter, by the way, at Nicole Sandler. And my favorite tweet of the afternoon so far comes from Old Sage Joe, who says, Romney is the Kama Sutra candidate, 64 different positions on each issue. So right. All right. I am Nicole Sandler of RadioOrNot.com, in for Tom Hartman. We'll take a quick break. Back with more of your calls next at 866-987-THOM.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Yeah, I'm usually not such a chicken. I usually fight back. But again, I'm a guest in my friend's home. I'll wait till after the show on Friday.
I keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds.
I want to let Johnny sing here.
I walk the line.
I guess that has to do with drawtheline.org. All right, Nicole Sandler in for Tom Hartman today. Taking your calls at 866. I lost the phone, 987-THOM. And, the story I threw out about the friend's house, her studio that I'm using, is just to let you know that I think we're all going to be dealing with this in the next 3 weeks and 6 days, is that we're going to have people that we genuinely like who we feel are genuinely wrong. And it's a good thing just to try out some lines to push back on them without, without getting nasty, without getting angry. But, it's going to get more and more tense as we get closer and closer to, to Election Day. All right. Bill in Miami, who's listening to us on Sirius Radio. Hi, Bill.
Hello. How you doing?
Great. What's on your mind?
I've been listening to you for 4 years or so.
Oh.
Not lately, because I can't find you on the radio in Miami.
Right. Well, because we don't have progressive talk here in Miami. I do
other
a show online.
You don't have it.
No,
okay.
at radioornot.com. So if you want to go to the online route, that's where I do my thing these days.
Okay. Now, my concern is that I have been listening to all these talk radio shows for the longest, and I hear a passing every once in a while of the pledge.
The Grover Norquist pledge not to
right.
raise taxes. Yep.
Right. And how can, even Romney has signed it. Jeb Bush wouldn't sign it.
Mm.
Romney has signed it. Ryan has signed it. And how are they going to honor the Constitution and when they pledge their soul?
Whoops. I think. Yeah, there you are. Yeah, you're breaking up, Bill, but I got the question. No, I hear you.
Okay.
Look, I think we do need to talk about this. And the fact is, you know, anybody who aspires to the highest office in the land should make only one pledge, and that is to uphold and defend
people.
The Constitution of the United States of America and to serve the American people. But these elected officials who take a pledge to Grover Norquist, I'm sorry, I don't remember anybody ever electing him to any office. What makes him? Who elected him? God.
And okay, but to me, and I talk to my neighbors, and I ask them if they've seen the list, and they don't even know what I'm talking about. But other than that, I would wish that would be exposed a lot more than it is. Okay, by the same token, the people that's talking about Romney this and Romney that, people of Florida just elected governor the same conditions.
Worse.
Fine,
let me tell you.
Paying the fine for beating the government.
Let me tell, for people who don't know, here in Florida, we have Rick Scott, who is the governor. For some inexplicable reason, the people of Florida voted for this guy who, prior to becoming governor, never held elected office. Instead, he was in the managed health care field, and he ran a company, a hospital chain called Columbia HCA. And Columbia HCA had to pay the largest fine in U.S. history for Medicare fraud. They paid a $1 billion fine for their activities while Rick Scott ran that company. And when he was called to testify, he pleaded the fifth 75 times. And the people of Florida still elected this guy. It's the syndrome known as the low information voters. Not only that, it's the Fox viewers, because they're fed lies. And I won't call them Fox and news. I won't use those two words together, because what they do is not news. What they do is make stuff up.
In that respect, not to interrupt you,
yeah,
but isn't this the same scenario with Mitt Romney? He refuses to answer our level questions, what his dealings are with putting his money in the Cayman Islands.
Yep.
When did he put them there? Because there might be insider information clause there.
I'll tell you what I think happened with why Mitt Romney will not release any taxes prior to 2010. And it has to do, and Bill, thank you for the call. I think you'll enjoy this. What happened was, in 2009, you might remember a guy named Bill Blankenfield, I think. I'm blowing his name, Brett Blankenfield. I'll find his exact name during the break. He was an IRS whistleblower. He was a banker in Switzerland who decided to take advantage of a reward that was being offered by the IRS to give information about U.S. investors who were, you know, stashing their money over there trying to avoid taxes. Bradley Birkenfeld, that was it. Sometimes it comes to me when I'm not thinking about it. So Bradley Birkenfeld said, hey, you've got a lot of people stashing their money over here. And so basically, the IRS uncovered a lot of money. And what they did was they offered these people amnesty. Bring your money back and pay the taxes you owe or some portion thereof, we'll cut you a deal, and you get amnesty and we won't prosecute you. I believe, and I don't have the facts to back me up on this, but I believe the reason that Mitt Romney will not release his taxes prior to 2010 is because his 2009 tax return will show that he took advantage of that tax amnesty. So I think Harry Reid floated the idea that perhaps, you know, Mitt Romney didn't pay any taxes. I think maybe there were times that, you know, he came pretty close to not, but I think it's more than that. I think he is very possibly covering up that he took advantage of the tax amnesty for, you know, being caught investing or stashing his money over in Switzerland. I don't know that we'll ever know, but that's what I think. All right, we're going to take a break here. When we come back on the other side, I'm going to talk about something really disturbing. I am not a religious person. I think everybody has the right to worship whatever god or gods they choose. That's their own business. But I have a problem with the fact that houses of worship enjoy tax-exempt benefits. They are tax-exempt. A lot of them take in a lot of money, and they don't pay any taxes. And now they want to get around that rule. They want to be able to preach politics from the pulpit and still not be required to pay any taxes. And a bunch of them last weekend participated in Pulpit Freedom Day. Yeah, endorsing Mitt Romney from the pulpit and challenging the IRS to come after them. We're going to talk about that next and talk about their tax-exempt status, which I think is blatantly unfair.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
All right, it is Nicole Sandler in for Tom Hartman today. I usually do a show online at radioornot.com, Monday through Thursday mornings, 10 to noon Eastern, and podcast anytime. And I'm thrilled to be in for Tom today. I want to get into this quickly because we have separation of church and state in this country for good reason. It's written into the Constitution. It is, and there's a bunch of pastors around the nation who think that they should be allowed to preach politics from the pulpit. In fact, this past Sunday was Pulpit Freedom Day, and they encouraged one another to get up on their pulpits and endorse their favorite right-wing candidate for elected office, including Mitt Romney, the purpose being to challenge the Johnson Amendment, which is the section of the IRS code that prohibits charities and religious institutions from endorsing or opposing specific candidates. In fact, Shano, do you have that clip from this Sunday? This is from a church in San Diego. Let's hear a little bit of that.
Then and only then will we see God's favor once again. When we stop increasing the debt instead of stopping the spending and using only what we've got. Until we begin to do that, this country won't turn around. Borrowing more money.
I don't know about you, but this sermon would put me to sleep.
We're right. Pay your debt.
You know what? Let's kill it. Basically, he went on and endorsed Mitt Romney. And he says, "This, I am trying to get the pulpit to be free." Okay. Joining us on the line now is Rob Boston. He's a senior policy analyst with Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Their website is au.org. Rob, thanks for joining me today on the Tom Hartman Show.
It's my pleasure, Nicole.
Now, you knew that this Pulpit Freedom Day was coming up, and in fact, I'm reading a story about it at Raw Story, and in fact, you had a San Diego member, the president of the San Diego chapter of Americans United, there who saw this sermon. What are they doing?
Well, they're flagrantly violating the law. This is a coordinated effort sponsored by an organization called the Alliance Defending Freedom.
Right.
The Alliance Defending Freedom was formed in the early 1990s by a coalition of TV and radio preachers with an extremely conservative outlook. And what they're trying to do is prod the IRS into pulling a church's tax-exempt status because they believe they can then go into court and challenge this on free speech grounds. Now, they're going to lose that case. In fact, there already was a case like that, and they lost. But for some reason, they want to try it again.
Wow. So the Johnson Amendment, which came into being in the 60s under, the President Johnson, Lyndon Johnson's administration, says that you cannot preach politics from the pulpit. And so now they're doing this to get a test case before the Supreme Court?
That's their plan, but I really think it's more about just raising money. This situation was already tested in the courts. There was a church in New York State that was stripped of its tax-exempt status after the 1992 election because it ran an ad, actually ran a full-page ad in USA Today telling people not to vote for Bill Clinton. And that case was taken into the courts by attorneys associated with the TV preacher Pat Robertson, and they lost at every level. Now, it didn't go all the way to the Supreme Court, but it worked its way up the ladder, and they lost that case. The answer here really is that tax exemption is an incredible benefit. It's a very lucrative benefit. And groups that have it, religious and non-religious, mm-hmm. must abide by a few simple rules. One of those rules is no endorsing or opposing candidates. Now, you can speak out on issues all you want, but you cannot endorse or oppose candidates.
Ah, so that's how, for instance, the Mormon Church, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, got by really getting behind Prop 8 in California, which undid marriage equality there in a big way.
That's right. Now, in that case, of course, they were spending a lot of money, and there were some state laws they had to meet, reporting requirements and so on. California's unusual. A lot of states don't even have laws like that. So these religious groups are coming in, spending all kinds of money on ballot referenda, and nobody even knows what's going on. But that, in many cases, is permissible. What's not permissible is having the pastor, put something in the church bulletin or on the website or standing up in a pulpit saying, vote for this candidate or don't vote for that candidate. And that isn't just churches. All groups that have tax exemption are under that same regulation. Most of them have no problem meeting that requirement.
Right. It's that 501c3 designation, which we've heard so much, which is a tax-exempt nonprofit group that is not supposed to, endorse or oppose a candidate. Yet they do it. Rob Boston is with us from Americans United for Separation of Church and State. A year and a half ago, I was actually arrested for daring to go to a town hall meeting with my congressman and trying to ask a question. The thing that was most disturbing to me, though, was the fact that this so-called town hall meeting was held at a Calvary Chapel, one of those mega churches. This church was not even in Alan West's district, who was unfortunately my congressman, though not for much longer, and not in his district. And the pastor came out and all but said, this guy's the greatest thing since sliced bread. I'm wondering, do people have an avenue to challenge a church's tax-exempt status if they encounter something like this?
Oh, in theory. It's a little frustrating, to be honest. The IRS claims that it will enforce this regulation, but they don't seem to be in any hurry to do that. Our organization has reported numerous houses of worship for violating the standard, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of activity coming out of the IRS. One of the things that we've been urging people to do is to just report these cases to the IRS and try to build up a little bit of public pressure here. These pastors they're not just going up to the line, they're jumping right over it. And it just isn't right. As I said a moment ago, all the other nonprofits in this country are abiding by the law. All we're asking for is that the law be applied evenly. Because, as I said, tax exemption is really a very powerful benefit, and when you get it, there are a couple of regulations and sensible oversight measures that you must follow, and this is one of them.
Exactly. I was surprised. I mean, when I first read this story on Monday, I was outraged, honestly, and I was surprised that it didn't get more play. Somewhere, 1,000, maybe 2,000 preachers around the country did this. They decided to get up in front of their congregations and break the law. I would like to see them, the IRS come after them. Will they?
Well, it's an interesting question. For starters, we don't know how many actually did break the law. In the years past, and the Alliance Defending Freedom has sponsored this event in previous years,
mm-hmm.
some of the pastors don't actually endorse or oppose a candidate. They merely talk about issues, which, as I mentioned earlier, is permissible.
They can do.
So first of all, we have to find out how many actually jumped over the line.
Uh-huh.
Then provide some documentation, prove that it happened, get it off to the IRS. We're doing that with a few of these churches now that we're participating and trying to get this to the attention of the IRS. Until they start to act, though, a lot of these pastors are going to feel empowered. Some of them are already arguing, well, the law is not being enforced. We can do what we want.
Right. So then it's up to people. If you go to church, I'm not a, I don't participate in organized religion, but if listeners do, maybe they should go and see if their pastors are doing this and turn them in. You know, nothing wrong with worshiping, but they need to follow the law. I think they should all be paying taxes, so maybe it would just be setting things right. And if they have a church that did participate, should they contact you guys? Go to AU.org.
Absolutely, especially if they have good, solid evidence of an endorsement or opposition of a candidate. We will forward that to the IRS.
Terrific. I think we all need to get involved here. Look, you want to solve, bring down the deficit? You want to bring down the debt? You know, have these houses of worship start paying some taxes. My goodness, some of, you know, they get a lot of money. Rob Boston, senior policy analyst from Americans United for Separation of Church and State. They do great work. Check them out at AU.org. Thank you, Rob. All right, a quick break here and then back with more of your calls. Nicole Sandler of RadioOrNot.com in for Tom Hartman. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Meditation here intensifies. Church and state, I can satisfy.
Welcome back. I am Nicole Sandler of RadioOrNot.com, in for Tom Hartman today. And we just spoke with Rob Boston of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Their website, by the way, AU.org, about this story that really has me angry, because pastors and Ross story, in fact, is saying up to 2,000 clergy around the country. But according to Rob, we don't know for sure how many participated in this thing, this organized event last Sunday, Pulpit Freedom Sunday, their organized effort to oppose the section of the IRS code that prohibits religious institutions from endorsing specific candidates. And many of these pastors actually decided to, I hope they make it a test case. They decided to do just what the law prohibits. And I would love to see this, well, I was going to say, I would love to see this go to the Supreme Court and double down on the fact that they're not allowed to do that. And if they do it, then they lose their tax exempt status. The problem is the Supreme Court, the way it is made up today, you know, all bets are off. They could do anything. And yes, they could say, you know what, let them. You know, if you think that this presidential election doesn't have any bearing on your life, all I can say is it's the Supreme Court, stupid. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is 187 years old at my last count. And, you know, I'm sorry, I don't think, let me put it a different way, she just might not make it through the next, presidency. The next president, whether it is Barack Obama or Mitt Romney, and it will be one of those two, will appoint probably one, maybe two, possibly three, perhaps even four Supreme Court justices. You've got Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who's old. You got Scalia, who's up there. Anthony Kennedy is up there. And one more. I'm drawing a blank again. One of the other liberal voices on the court, I believe, is also up there. So, you know, there is so much at stake. I'm drawing a blank on his name. Anyway, I think it's that important. Stephen Breyer. Thank you, Shano, for whispering that in my ear. So I think this is the big story, and I was actually surprised that it didn't get more play anywhere. Because if I were a religious person, even at the Calvary Chapel where I was thrown out for asking Alan West a question, there was a woman who was sitting next to me who said, look, I go to this church and I'm offended that pastor is up there buddying it up, yucking it up with Alan West. I think it's wrong. Well, it is wrong. All right. I want to go to the phones, and I see we have Marie from is Edgebel, Colorado. I know I'm pronouncing the name of your town wrong.
That's
Marie?
Okay. It's Edgebel.
Edgebel. Okay. And you're a pastor, huh?
I am a pastor. I am absolutely committed to separation of church and state, too. Right. I want to say that initially.
Okay.
I've been extremely careful throughout my career, even though I'm quite progressive, to never discuss candidates. It's been difficult, though, with the far right's push to incorporate religious beliefs in with a particular political ideology,
yes,
because anytime I raise issues, some of my congregation starts getting nervous and saying, oh, but you're getting political again. And I keep saying, no, issues like taking care of the poor, you know, justice issues, those kinds of things.
Right.
No, that's our bailiwick. That's what we're supposed to be discussing. So it gets frustrating. The other thing that's frustrating for me is my congregation is one that feeds the poor and clothes the hungry. We have a food bank right in our sanctuary that's open to anyone in our community.
Nice.
And it's supported by the community, but we're the place that houses it. We've done that historically. We're broke. We're broke. I'm at half-time pay. I work full-time,
wow,
but I'm at half-time pay. And it's because we've been doing what we're supposed to be doing all along. We're not a mega church. We're a community organization serving the community. These people hurt us. The Bush administration wanted to destroy the social safety net that we all participated in and said, let the nice church people do it.
Right.
Well, the reality is the nice church people who aren't these far-right mega churches are broke. And we're,
yes,
having a devil of a time, and I use that word intentionally,
uh-huh,
a devil of a time keeping up with the increasing needs.
Right.
When it's my people who are the ones who have the needs and are trying to take care of the community as well.
Boy, I hear you loud and clear. And Marie, there are churches out there who do great work, but there are also people, and I don't know what denomination your church is. Would you like to tell us?
We are United Methodist. I'm
okay,
proud of it.
Great. And so there are a lot of people out there who call themselves Christian, but I'll tell you, I'm a secular atheist Jew, and I feel like I'm more Christian than some of these people who wear their evangelicalism on their sleeve. In that,
well, I
believe.
I agree. I,
right,
don't see how Paul Ryan can call himself a Roman Catholic and,
mm-hmm,
and Ayn Rand enthusiast.
Well, that's a disconnect.
Don't get that at all.
That's a disconnect if there ever was one. Yeah, and Jesus, look, I look at what I think Jesus was an amazing man, and he taught great things and compassion. And what I see out of today's Republican Party, and I know you can't say this, but I can, is something that is as far from compassion and Christian values as one can possibly get. I don't know how the Michelle Bachmans of the world and some of these other hateful evangelicals can actually, you know, say, I'm a follower of Christ. You're not.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree. And as a secular Jew, I mean, if you look back in the Levitical code, what was the center of the Levitical code? It was chapter 19. Treat your neighbors as you want to be treated,
exactly,
yourself.
Exactly.
Jesus says that that's absolutely at the heart of everything that he was about. As far as I can determine, that ethic of reciprocity, or what we call the golden rule, is at the heart of the world's great faith. And it's also part of every ethical system that's ever been devised.
You're so right. And I think these people who, you know, go out and tout their religion should go back maybe and read their Bible. Marie, thank you for the call. I really appreciate it. You know, it's a shame that a pastor like that, is lumped in with some of the craziness on the right. But there she is. Obviously, her church is doing some really good work.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
I'm Nicole Sandler, of course, in for Tom Hartman today. You can always find me at radioornot.com and on Twitter at Nicole Sandler. We'll be back with more of your calls next. All right, back at it. Nicole Sandler of radioornot.com in for Tom Hartman today. And all right, before the break, we were talking about these preachers who are, I think, abusing their authority and preaching politics from the pulpit against the law. I think they should lose their tax-exempt status. You got the freedom to do whatever you want. We have the freedom to collect taxes from you. I was going to say even worse than that, although I don't know that this is worse than that, but it's just as bad. This guy, David Siegel, did you hear this story? David Siegel, one of the wealthiest men in the country, billionaire David Siegel. He is the head of a timeshare, Westgate Resorts of Orlando. that employs somewhere in the neighborhood of 7,000 people, sent out an email to all his employees. And I guess this is how some of those preachers did it. He said in the email that he didn't want to tell them how to vote, but he wanted them to know that another 4 years of President Barack Obama could make it tough for him to keep them employed. Yeah, here's some quotes from the email he sent. You see, I can no longer support a system that penalizes the productive and gives to the unproductive. My motivation to work and to provide jobs will be destroyed. And with it, so will your opportunities. If that happens, you can find me in the Caribbean sitting on the beach under a palm tree, retired and with no employees to worry about. Signed, your boss. I can't even express how disgusting and heinous that is. Now, this guy is featured in a new documentary called The Queen of Versailles. It came out this summer, and it's about he and his wife who wanted to build, like, the biggest house in the world, a 90,000-square-foot mansion on here in Florida, on Lake Butler in Florida. And, you know, can I just say this guy is upset that, you know, as a zillionaire, sorry, just a billionaire, he might have to pay more in taxes, and so he's threatening his employees' jobs. And he and his wife just, you know, they had to build the biggest house ever, what, just because they would, just because they could, because they had nothing better to spend their billions of dollars on. By the way, the financial meltdown, I guess, came during the building of this house, and it's been sitting on the market, and they can't sell it. Why doesn't he just turn it into a hotel, Mr. Westgate Resorts? It's this kind of opulence just for the sake of opulence that disgusts me. Think of the money. You know, maybe he could have given his employees a raise or given them better health care or, I don't know, maybe donated some money to charity. When you have that kind of obscene money that you can build a 90,000-square-foot house for two people. It wasn't like he was, you know, taking in foster kids either. This was just for him and his wife. Disgusting. But would you expect anything less from somebody that disgusting? I guess not. All right. I want to get to some of the calls because some of you guys have been holding on for a long time. So let's do it. Brenda from Wexford, Illinois, listening on WCPT. Hi.
Hi. Just three quick comments and then I'll hang up and listen to your reply.
Okay.
First of all, with Ryan, why would anybody want to choose him? Number one, he was the governor in Wisconsin that was recalled due to his wacky thing concerning virtually removing any and all bargaining rights of the
That's not Paul Ryan. No. Paul Ryan is a congressman from Wisconsin. Scott Walker is the governor there.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. No problem.
I've been sitting there for quite a while.
I know
anyway,
you have.
There is a question about some of the things that the Republican committee is doing is they're sending out applications for voter registrations and mainly concentrating on Democratic voters and instructing them to bring them in or send them into the wrong place on purpose.
Aye.
That was actually on the radio yesterday.
Wow.
They're actually announcing it.
That I don't doubt. You know, the Republicans just want to win. They don't care about winning honestly. They'll win ugly. They'll win dirty. They'll win by lying and cheating and stealing. They just want to win at all costs. The Democrats want to win fairly and squarely, and they want everybody to be able to vote. Big difference there. One quick thought about, I'm going to vote absentee, but I had Greg Palast on my show recently, and he's got a new book, Ballot Bandits. And one thing that they suggest is if you vote absentee, you get that absentee ballot, bring it in, hand deliver it to your supervisor of elections office, because there are, you know, those who will take ballots from Democratic areas and just toss them. You know, you can't trust anybody now, again, because the Republicans want to win, even if they win really ugly.
And the last comment that I had was, I forgot to hit the record button to see the, debate, but I did see a few of the highlights, and one of the comments that Romney has mentioned was that the Republicans seem to have fared, or the upper class fared okay, and he's smugly. You could see the look of smirk on his face to keep from laughing, like, aha, you know, they did okay during the Depression, but not without doing it on the backs of the middle class and losing their homes, and they just brought everything up on a dime a dozen, so to speak. And to me, if people didn't see that, they weren't watching close enough.
Okay. I don't recall that part of it, but I thank you for the call, Brenda, and thanks for holding on so long. We're going to get through a lot more of your calls here. Let's just go to Barry in Ligonier, Pennsylvania?
Ligonier.
You could tell I've never lived in Pennsylvania.
I'm about 60 miles east of Pittsburgh, PA.
Okay, all right.
Well, it's a pleasure. I'm a first-time caller, and it's a pleasure to meet you and listen to you. I'm an admirer of you already.
Oh, thank you.
Tom, I idolize the ground that guy walked on, and Bernie, too. I wish Empty would run for president and vice president.
That
I want to get across
ticket.
Real quick, because I want to give your other callers a chance.
Okay.
That documentary heist that that Tom narrated, oh, my God, it just touched home. I am 57 years old, an ex-steel worker. I lost my job back in the Reagan recession, was forced to take service industry jobs. I'm making money now that I made back in the 80s, except things cost a lot more. Cars are $40,000 instead of $5,000.
Right.
So that really struck home for me. Another thing I wanted to tell you is I went campaigning myself, and I was like you, didn't see a lot of Obama signs.
Mm-hmm.
First time I've ever done this. I am so active this year because I don't want Romney in there. I'm afraid if he gets in there, I'm going to have another Reagan again and Bush. And I just don't want that. But we met a couple. I had a 40-year-old woman come around with me. She brought her little kid around to kind of get him involved in politics. And we approached two gentlemen around my age that were Republicans, and they were stout Republicans, and they wanted Romney in there, but they were very courteous. I was really surprised. And most of the people just gave you a quick answer, but it seems like the people that are for Obama are afraid to say they are, you know. So I think that's one of the problems today that I'm seeing, and I'm trying to think what else I wanted. Oh, and I also... I picketed a tea party in Greensburg, PA. That's about 30 miles from Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a sign that I got off of the internet on a bumper thing where they have bumper stickers. And I put on there, the tea party is for little girls and imaginary friends. Well, I got heckled, and I just gave a peace sign and pointed to the sign and laughed about it. But I had a lot of people come over to me. A lot of people beat the horn, and I was really surprised. So. I want to thank you folks, and I want to thank DirecTV for covering you guys.
Thank you
so much.
All right. Thank you for the call. Good points. I love that sign. That's a great idea. I think right now we have to really work to keep our senses of humor intact because it's ugly out there, and people are getting angry and getting unreasonable, and sometimes you just need to take a deep breath and chuckle. Dave, listening on TomHartmann.com in Philadelphia. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. What's on your mind
today? I
love
you, Nicole.
Thank you.
I got a couple quick points. One, I'm very sick of the polling and all this stuff. You know, it seems like we're polling, you know, every minute, and the media is making this into a horse race, which works out very good for them, but that's very good for them and the advertisers, but that's not why I called. I called because, sorry. I digress.
Okay.
I called because we were talking about, I think that the Romney support is really not as strong as it seems. I think half of the, a big chunk of the Romney support is just against Democrats or against Obama.
Well, you know, there's a black man in the White House.
Well, I know, but here's my anecdotal evidence. You were talking about signs earlier,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Up the street from me, what I call Republican Row, there's like six houses that always have four, five, six, seven signs for local, national signs, you know,
mm-hmm.
for Republican candidates. There are no Romney signs out there.
Well, you know, look, here's the thing. Mitt Romney was not anybody's first choice. The Republican Party did not want Mitt Romney. He was sort of the last man standing. You know, I always thought during the debates they should have had, you know, to make it more like a reality show. And when someone gives a really stupid answer, the trap door underneath opens up and they fall through the floor. But that's sort of what happened. And Romney was the last guy standing. Nobody wanted him. Now they're stuck with him. And, you know, he's their guy. Go figure. All right. Nicole Sandler for Tom.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
All right. More of your calls on the way at 866-987-THOM. I am Nicole Sandler. You can follow me on Twitter at Nicole Sandler. Find me at RadioOrNot.com.
I read the news today.
Oh, boy. All right. It is Nicole Sandler of RadioOrNot.com in for Tom Hartman. And joining us now on the line from the Talk Radio News Service is Victoria Jones. Hi there.
Hi there, Nicole.
What's happening since we spoke this morning?
The Supreme Court heard oral arguments this morning in one of the term's most important cases, which is about whether public colleges and universities can continue to consider race as one factor among many in the admissions process. Now, back in 2003, the court decided 5-4 in favor of that. In other words, a limited form of affirmative action. And it decided that part of a state school system's mission was to educate a diverse population and promote equality of opportunity. But the court decided to take up the case that was put before it. And that's usually a clue that they are thinking, well, maybe we feel differently this way. And
wow.
This is a more conservative court. Sandra Day O'Connor, who wrote the decision, is no longer on the court. She's been replaced with Justice Samuel Alito. And the opposing argument in that case was that any government procedure that sorts people by race is unconstitutionally discriminatory. And today, the justices were fairly testy. Three of the court's foremost conservative justices, Chief Justice John Roberts, Justice Antonin Scalia, and Justice Samuel Alito, were clearly hostile to the Texas plan. The case in point is at the University of Texas. Justice Clarence Thomas didn't speak.
Well, what
there
else is
new? Only eight justices in this case because Elena Kagan has recused herself.
Huh. Okay, so they were hostile to
the idea of keeping this limited form of affirmative action.
Wow. Wow. Once again, I say to anyone who is like, well, Obama hasn't really been good enough for me, it's the Supreme Court, stupid. There's so much at stake here. So this is fascinating. Now, today is it? There was just, today, Supreme Court cases are generally a couple of hours of arguments back and forth, and that's it, right?
Yeah, in fact, they're usually only an hour. This one was 90 minutes, so they gave it quite a lot of time. The liberals on the court, Justice Sonia Sotomayor, who's the court's only Hispanic, apparently was the most vocal defender of the Texas program on the court. Justice Anthony Kennedy is considered the swing vote in this case, and he was largely skeptical about the Texas program. But he didn't say that he would join a ruling that would completely wipe out all use of race in college admissions at state-run schools. He's historically been in favor of some kind of affirmative action, but he wants it very narrowly tailored. So we probably won't find out until next year.
I see. So Kagan, right. And Kagan recused herself because she worked on this as Solicitor General before she entered the court?
That's correct.
All right.
That's correct.
Okay. There's another case that the Ohio Secretary of State is bringing the higher court, the appeals court in Ohio, ruled yesterday that early voting would be reinstated for the 3 days before Election Day in Ohio for all citizens. The Secretary of State there, John Husted, only wanted it for active duty military personnel. And so instead of letting the people vote, as is their right, he said he's going to take it to the Supreme Court. Have they answered yet and said whether or not they're going to hear this case?
No word from them yet.
No word yet.
Still waiting to hear from them.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Also today, a day after Mitt Romney's comments to the Des Moines Register about abortion and legislation to restrict it, reporters grabbed him on a rope line in Ohio. And this is according to the Pool report. Mitt Romney said this: "I think I've said time and again that I'm a pro-life candidate and I'll be a pro-life president. The actions I'll take immediately is to remove funding for Planned Parenthood. It will not be part of my budget. And also, I've indicated that I will reverse the Mexico City position of the president. I will reinstate the Mexico City policy, which keeps us from using foreign aid for abortions overseas."
Oh, my God. You know, there's a piece up I'm looking feverishly for. I think it's on BuzzFeed, which is Mitt Romney's stance on abortion through the years. And it starts off with him in, I think, 1994. As, you know, I am pro-choice, I'm all for a woman's right to choose, and then it more, you know, with each subsequent campaign, depending on what kind of a race he was in, he's either pro-choice or, you know, the pro-personhood amendment for fetuses.
It has changed. Also, a new Pew survey out today, released ahead of tomorrow's VP debate. Very interesting. Of the 90% who expressed an opinion, 51% view Vice President Biden unfavorably. Paul Ryan, only 40% of the 84% who expressed an opinion viewed him unfavorably.
Wow.
Also, Republicans are more confident that Ryan will win the debate than Democrats are about Biden's chances. 8 in 10 Republicans say Ryan will do the better job in the debate. Fewer Democrats, 62%, expect Biden to do better.
All right. Well, this is just, you know, we all have a crystal ball, I guess.
Exactly.
Right. All right. What else? We've only got about a minute.
Exactly. President Obama gave an interview today and said, I was just too polite.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess. You know, there are those who say that was it. He was trying to be presidential. Well, I think we're going to see a different Barack Obama at the podium on Tuesday.
And he promised that. He said, you're going to see a little more activity next time.
A little more activity. Okay, well, you know, it's a town hall format. Maybe he'll get up and walk around. At least we won't have John McCain walking like, you know, just wandering aimlessly. Do you remember that from four years ago?
I do remember that. I don't think we're going to see that.
No, I don't think we're going to see that either. But we don't know which Mitt Romney. Well, I think we do know which Mitt Romney we'll see. And it's going to be this, you know, this Mitt Romney who's pivoted back to center because now that he's won the primary, he doesn't have to be a severe conservative anymore.
Exactly. And perhaps the president will call him on that.
I hope so. I hope so. All right. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service. Find her and her colleagues at talkradionews.com. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
All right. Nicole Sandler. In for Tom Hartman. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And I am Nicole Sandler of RadioOrNot.com, in for Tom, and happy to be here. So we were talking earlier about the first presidential debate, hard to forget, happened a week ago tonight. And although that was the debate that was supposed to center on domestic issues, they really missed so much. I mean, they didn't talk about the environment and climate change. They didn't talk about civil liberties or labor or veterans or LGBT issues or women's issues or poverty. Poverty. All right. We're going to talk about poverty now. Joining us is Greg Kaufman. He writes for The Nation. You can access his work at thenation.com. And he's written a series of things. In fact, there was a column. Greg, first of all, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining me today.
Nice to be with you, Nicole.
You know, you had some suggested questions that you wrote in your blog at thenation.com before the debate, and then obviously they didn't. They missed a lot of this. And poverty is a pretty important issue because there are so many Americans living in poverty right now. I mean, we're seeing crazy numbers. Where are we compared to, say, where we were around the time of the Great Depression?
Well, I mean, we have record numbers of people in poverty now. We have 46 million people in poverty, which is less than $23,000 for a family of four, $18,000 for a family of three.
Wow.
That includes 22% of all children, 16 million kids. And, you know, there was a poll taken in January of 2012, and 88% of likely voters said that a candidate's position on poverty was important in deciding their vote. Nearly half those people said it's very important. So, you know, we should have a lot of people who are very unhappy with the state of the debate as it relates to poverty today.
Absolutely. I think there are a lot of people unhappy for a multitude of reasons, but
yeah.
This is a big one. Let's just look at the kids. 16 million children, 22% of all kids now live in poverty. That means a lot of kids going to bed hungry at night, or perhaps they go to school and the hot meal that they might get there for lunch might be the only hot meal they get.
That's right.
This is, and I don't care how many times you'll hear from the right, we're broke. No, we are not. This is still the wealthiest nation on the planet. Let me say that again. The wealthiest nation on the planet. How do we reconcile this?
Well, I think it's really hard to reconcile, and I'm glad you brought this up. I mean, we're talking about 1 in 3 African-American and Latino children in poverty, 1 in 4 children under age 6. Children are now the poorest age group in the country. And what's really the most frustrating thing about this is that we have the data that shows what even modest investments, what kind of difference they can make in kids' lives. For example, two of the most prominent child poverty researchers, Greg Duncan and Catherine Magnuson, showed they studied kids born in the late 60s and early 70s in poverty and their adult outcomes at age 30. Now, families that just received $3,000 in today's dollars, an annual boost of income when those kids were prenatal to 5, just $3,000. Those kids as adults had higher achievement in education, nearly 20% increase in earnings, higher working hours after age 25, and the kids who didn't receive, those families didn't receive that, they had worse outcomes in schooling, earnings, need for food stamps, health, arrests, non-marital births.
Wow.
So it's really crazy, you know, when you look at the costs, moral issues aside, it's just stupid that we don't make the investments that we need to.
It is, and not only is that stupid, there's a great program that's in the Affordable Care Act that would help so many of the people who are living in poverty, and that is the adjustments to Medicaid, the Medicaid program, which covers the poor.
And
what we have Republican governors in a number of states, I don't know the exact number, but including here in Florida where I live, Rick Scott, who they want to, the one thing the Supreme Court did while upholding the constitutionality of the mandate and thus Obamacare, said though that states can opt out of the Medicaid program, which will really screw the whole thing up, won't it?
You're absolutely right, Nicole. And, you know, that was one area where I really wanted President Obama take an opportunity when Governor Romney was discussing Medicaid.
Right.
So, you know, there's no question that President Obama would be a lot better for people, for low-income people in general. I'm not sure why he doesn't want to talk more about it. But with Medicaid in particular, I mean, you know, these guys want to repeal the Affordable Care Act. You're talking about, according to the Urban Institute, an additional 14 to 19 million uninsured people just by the Medicaid cuts. I mean,
right.
Then another 30 million who would be insured under the Affordable Care Act who won't have insurance. So, you know, there are big and significant differences, and I'm just not sure where the president and his team's, you know, where they're in the debate, but even throughout the campaign, why they're not talking more.
Yeah, you know, the thing about Medicaid that people don't realize because it hasn't been talked about enough is under the Affordable Care Act, under Obamacare, the federal government picks up 100% of the cost for the first 3 years. For the next 3 years, it's 97%.
Right.
And then I think it goes to 95% for the rest for the rest of in perpetuity, I suppose. And this will cover, I mean, it'll save a state so much money by giving these people, ensuring that they have health care so that they don't wind up in the emergency room. They don't wind up, you know, when it's too late, when they're so catastrophically ill because they haven't had the preventive care, going into the hospital and costing us a hell of a lot more money.
That's right. I mean, time and again with these things, again, I would just say that the moral arguments are obvious, and we'd like to think of ourselves as a country that cares about kids and families. But the economic arguments, I mean, are there. And, you know, I did a piece and spoke with advocates down in South Carolina. That's one of the states, Governor Haley, saying, no, we're not going to do it. And they're just besides themselves because it is so clearly just politics. You know, they just like to demagogue and bash people in poverty. And it's just it's tragic. And,
well,
and
47% right. And you know, Mitt Romney's 47% comments, which really the 47% encompasses much more than just those who are poverty stricken. Obviously, we know it's the elderly, it's active military, it's a lot of people who are in that 47% who don't have to pay federal income tax. But it's like they they're looking down their nose at people who are less fortunate instead of trying to help them.
That's right. And you know, you look at his string of ads he ran about welfare when Obama proposed that Health and Human Services proposed mm-hmm. states have more flexibility. I mean, that's a Republican proposal. They ran a series of ads saying that Obama's trying to gut the work requirement from welfare. And they said, you know, these people will just be able to get a check without working. I mean, the average cash welfare
right.
benefit is one-third the poverty line. You're talking about
right.
less than $6,000 annually for a family of three. So who are the people who can just live off of this and who want to live
exactly
want their families to live off that?
Nobody. And here's a challenge to the Romney campaign. Show me somebody who aspires to that.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
It's really sickening. It's a great work you've done. Greg Kaufman of The Nation, this Talk Poverty series. I urge everyone to read it. And hopefully, knock on wood here, tomorrow night in the vice presidential debate, Joe Biden will step up to the plate, to use your baseball analogy, and talk about this. This is, you know, it's sort of the ugly secret that the elephant, the 800-pound elephant in the country that no one wants to address. And it's time we do. Greg Kaufman. Follow him on Twitter at Greg Kaufman and read him at The Nation. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Nicole.
Take care. All right. A really important subject. All right. We'll take a break. Come back with more of your calls next. Nicole Sandler in for Tom Hartman. Don't go away.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
The number is 866-987-THOM. The rest of our time together today is all yours. We'll blast through all your calls. All right. So stick around. Nicole Sandler of RadioOrNot.com in for Tom Hartman, and really honored and happy to be here. I'm going to get back to your calls in just a moment, but there's another story that will probably be all over cable news tonight, and it just shows Mitt Romney is shameless. It's just beyond belief that he would do this. Shano, you've got that audio. Do you have the piece of Romney? This is part of his stump speech, and he's talking about meeting a former Navy SEAL who was one of the four Americans killed in the attack on the American consulate in Benghazi.
Well, I met some wonderful people. One was a former Navy SEAL, and Glenn Doherty, and he we chatted for a while. He came from Massachusetts, where I'd been governor, and had family there. He also had skied in some of the places, snow skiing, that I had found during the Winter Olympics in Utah that I'd skied at, and we had a nice chat together.
He
served as a Navy SEAL, and after his service as a SEAL, after a number of years, he had stayed involved helping in the Middle East, providing security services to our government and to other enterprises to provide help to them. And you can imagine how shocked I was to learn that he was one of the two former Navy SEALs killed in Benghazi just a couple of weeks ago. And I read on CNN International that when the report came that our consulate had been attacked, that he and the other SEAL that was killed with him, that they were in a different place. They were about a mile away in an annex somewhere else in the city. And when they heard that the consulate was under attack, they went to the attack. They didn't hunker down and hide themselves. No, they went there.
Yeah, so Mitt Romney, they're telling the story, and it sounded from that explanation like, you know, they had this great, you know, meeting, and they chatted, and, you know, there was a connection there. Well, Elf Ellison was Glenn Daugherty's best friend. And Elf Ellison, you know, is incensed by this, that Mitt Romney has been using this story about his meeting with Glenn Daugherty on the stump. And here's some quotes. I'm just going to read this. Describing his friend, he said he was a guy living wise beyond his years, always trying to be progressive as well as do the right thing, always challenging himself to his greatest ability. Talking about his meeting with Mitt Romney that time, this is, again, Glenn Daugherty's best friend, Elf Ellison, said, he said it was very comical. Mitt Romney approached him ultimately four times, using this private gathering as a political venture to further his image. He kept introducing himself as Mitt Romney, a political figure. The same introduction, the same opening line, Glenn believed it to be very insincere and stale. Here's another quote. He said it was pathetic and comical to have the same person come up to you with only a half hour, have this person reintroduce himself to you, having absolutely no idea whatsoever that he did this just 20 minutes ago and didn't even recognize Glenn's face. This guy is using our great friend, our humble and honorable great friend. He has become part of the soapbox routine for politics in a presidential race. Honestly, it makes me sick. Glenn would feel more than anything almost embarrassed for Romney. I think he would feel pity for him. Not only that, Daugherty's mother was interviewed by a Boston television station, WHDH, and she said, I don't trust Romney. He shouldn't make my son's death part of his political agenda. It's wrong to use these brave young men who wanted freedom for all to degrade Obama. Apparently, Daugherty's mother contacted the Romney campaign and said, stop using this story, which was, by the way, false, in the stump. Apparently, after the story broke this earlier this afternoon, Romney still told the story at the next campaign stop. Now, I'm sorry. This man wants to be commander-in-chief. How much does it take? How much time does it take to pull out a paragraph out of a stump speech? Shameful. Absolutely disgusting and shameful. All right. Let's go back to the phones. George in Yreka, California, watching on Free Speech TV. Hi.
Hi, and thank you very much. The most important thing I can say is that there's a direct connection between the 1930 California gubernatorial race with,
I can't help you with 1930.
Upton Sinclair.
Oh, okay.
Who wrote The Jungle.
Sure.
And the Republicans went to his strengths and defeated him with one of the very first of the slime campaigns that Fox News is so good at right now. And the one thing we got to remember is it's not so much the fact that they're disenfranchising voters, but more, they're making us focus on the disenfranchisement of the voters, where the real problem is going to be the voting machines that haven't been changed since the handing of multiple elections to Republicans by a Republican group.
You know, I've covered this a lot. I do it on my show at RadioOrNot.com.
Yes,
I have Brad Friedman on a lot. I know Tom talks about it a lot. And we may deal with it in the next couple of days as well. I think David Pakman had a story that said Bain Capital, one of their, you know, one of the companies they control, has ownership of some of the electronic voting machines that are being used this election year. I know Tom mentioned it yesterday because I heard him say it, that, and I remember when the story came out a couple of months ago.
Yes,
go ahead.
May I, that's the most important thing I had to say.
Yes.
However, there is one other one.
Okay.
I was the head of a 501c3 organization, and I was able to confront and political laws. It was very dangerous for me, though, because if I had been convicted of the crime I was supposedly, that I was legitimately confronting, I would have been removed from the 501c3 IRS classification.
Right, right. And the thing is, these churches that have been breaking that law should lose their tax-exempt status. Thank you for the call. Yeah, we'll talk about the voting machines and what they're doing in Ireland. They're selling them for scrap metal. Good on them.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Yeah, that's what we need to do here. So we'll get to that. All right, I'm Nicole Sandler of RadioOrNot.com, in for Tom Hartman. We'll take a break, come back with more of your calls next. So don't go away.
The more you ignore me, the closer I get.
All right. Nicole Sandler in for Tom Hartman today. And a few minutes ago, I told you the story of how Mitt Romney has been, I don't know, politicizing the death of former Navy SEAL Glenn Doherty, one of the four Americans killed in the attack on the American consulate in Benghazi a few weeks back. And somebody just emailed me this. I had forgotten about it, but I'm a big supporter of Mikey Weinstein and the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. What they do is they fight this institutionalized proselytizing that goes on in the military. If you're not up on what happens in our names in the military, you need to learn. Go to militaryreligiousfreedom.org and read up on what Mikey Weinstein and those guys do. Well, Glenn Doherty was a board member of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. And in a statement that Mikey Weinstein put out after the attack, he wrote, "For Glenn Doherty, combating the unconstitutional religious proselytizing within the U.S. military was simply a matter of fulfilling his sworn oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. In his capacity as one of the longest-serving core contributors to the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, Glenn initiated and fulfilled his tasks with enormous verve and unflagging enthusiasm." The fact that his best friend and his mother came out and slammed Mitt Romney for doing this, for you know, taking his name in vain and trying to, trying to allege that there was some kind of a connection there is disgusting, is despicable. And the fact that his friend recounted the story that Glenn Doherty had told him of, introducing himself to him four times over, I've been there. I've been in radio for a long time. I used to work in music radio before. I lived in New York when I was just a wee little child, fresh out of college. Before I got into music radio, I started in talk. I worked at WMCA, then The Good Guys in New York. I produced the Bob Grant Show. Big, I guess he was the forerunner of Rush Limbaugh and the crazies on the right. But I also produced a monthly call-in show with then-Governor Mario Cuomo of New York. Yeah, going back to 1982, 83 now. And the thing about Mario Cuomo is he would come in every month, and he'd know if I cut my hair, if I lost a couple of pounds, if I gained a couple of pounds. He was that kind of a guy. He is, as far as I know, still that kind of a guy. He took a personal interest. He would ask about my dad, things like that. A few years later, I worked at WPLJ, a music station, and Ed Koch, then the mayor of New York, would come in. I must have met Ed Koch easily 8 or 10 times, and each time he would come into the station, he'd, introduce himself to me. Like, yeah, we've met before. You know, big radio station in New York City. I'm sorry. That's the difference. Mitt Romney reminds me of Ed Koch. I've never met Barack Obama, but I guess that he would remember if he met you 20 minutes earlier. All right. Let's get back to the phones. We got a lot of you guys holding on who have been waiting a while. I thank you for that. Gloria, watching on Free Speech TV in Shannon, North Carolina. Hi.
Hi. How are you doing?
Doing great. Thank you.
I
I listened to you some time ago. We were visiting in Florida, and I am so embarrassed to say we stayed at Westgate.
Who knew? I went to one of their timeshare tours when I was visiting Disney once. You better know I'll never do that again.
I will never, never, never.
Nope.
But I wanted to make a comment on a statement that a fella said earlier in the show about the being banned.
Yeah.
And basically, that's where our country is headed.
Yeah.
We will be banned. Well, it started back with Nixon, Reagan, and along there. You know, load the country up with debt,
what's
in the bankruptcy, and take as many slaves as they can. And it's ugly to say, but that's basically what they're trying to do.
You're right, and that's
the population.
Exactly, and that was Mitt Romney's M.O. at Bain Capital. They would take over a company, leverage it to the hilt, put it in as much debt as possible, pull out all the cash, and then, you know, and then declare bankruptcy. And,
that's,
you know,
all those basically people. It. Last week, Donald Trump received a check from our taxpayers' dollars for $97 million. Now, he wants to build a golf course in the Bronx. Okay, he built a golf. We're talking about a whole bunch of low-paying jobs because Donald Trump is not having any intention of paying anybody anything.
Right.
That's not his. With Mitt Romney, that's his forte. But basically, that's where we're headed. And if Mitt Romney gets in office, and God knows I'm praying every day he does not.
Yeah.
But if he gets in office, that's exactly what. And it's not going to take 4 years to do it. I give you 2 years.
Yeah.
All be totally suffering.
Yeah, driving us into the ground, really screwing up the economy, that can happen very quickly. It takes longer to fix things. Thank you for the call, Gloria. I appreciate it. Lewis in Orlando, Florida, listening on Sirius. Hi.
Hey, good. I'm really glad I got to hear you. I've got you on my favorites now on my computer because I'm an old Miami listener, Neil Rogers. I like progressive radio. And it's a breath of fresh air hearing you, to tell you the truth.
Thank you so much.
Two things. I worked. I'm an AT&T tech. I'm a union member, Communication Workers of America, Local 3108. We're a growing local. The union movement is not dead. No thanks to a lot of people, including Democrats like Rahm Emanuel, who to me are sellouts and traitors to the union movement. And I will not vote for anybody, including a Democrat like him, who burned his teachers in Chicago, embarrassed them, belittled them. I don't know what your opinion is on that, but I was flabbergasted.
Horrible. What he did, and look, you know what? The teachers struck, and they won. Good for them.
They won. And you could make arguments that we need to have, if you want to complain about teachers, well, then give them better training.
Yeah.
Don't say you all suck.
No, give them the resources they need to do their jobs.
And also, I don't know if you know Miami. I don't know what part of South Florida. I was raised in Miami. Liberty City, Overtown, those are intransigent ghettos that took, I mean, decades to get as bad as they were.
Yeah.
A culture of defeatism. That's not the teacher's ability to go in and change that culture of defeatism. That's us as human beings. I have to say, our union, we volunteered, and it was Bell South at the time, now AT&T. Our management gave us 2 hours a day every week to go in and read to elementary school kids at Fish Cane Elementary in Miami.
Wow.
Because they had no father figure mentors. The teachers loved it. The kids were wild. We came in. I'm a former Marine, and I'm going to take a quick digression. These chicken hawks like Mitt Romney and Ryan and Cheney and Wolfowitz, who never wore the uniform like I did, never put their life in the line. I jumped out of planes, perfectly good airplanes, voluntarily, with a radio on to call in airstrikes and live fire. So people like them don't have to fight. And it makes me so angry that a guy like Romney now is criticizing Obama about Syria. Dude, do you want to invade Syria? Not one Romney relative, look in the paper, not one Romney relative ever wore the uniform of the United States military. And for him to say we're going to go and bomb Syria and invade Syria when his ass is not on the line is total total demagoguery, and I despise him for that.
Boy, you said a lot there. No, it's true. Mitt Romney, who protested in favor of the Vietnam War. Yeah, let's let that sink in for a moment. Then went to France as a, you know, on a Mormon mission to avoid the draft. It's the height of hypocrisy. Hey, Lewis, you're in Orlando. You get to vote for Alan Grayson and bring him back to Congress?
Well, I'm actually voting for Dal Demings, who's the former Orlando police chief. She's going against Daniel Webster. I voted for Grayson last time.
Okay, but you're in a different district.
Grayson's going to win handily.
I hope.
Handily. This is not even a close one. He's going to destroy
good.
Tom Long.
Oh, I hope so. We need Alan Grayson back in Congress. There's some great work being done in Orlando, a lot of great activism up there. In fact, a big push for paid sick days against the mayor of Orlando and Disney, and, you know, who doesn't want to pay their workers, you know, if they're sick. So there's a lot of good stuff happening in Orlando. Thanks for the call.
Thanks.
Take care. All right. Flo and, Flo and Sunrise. Let's make this quick. Hi.
We don't have a lot of time, Nicole.
No, he just told me
you
in my ear. We got a minute.
It happened up in Orlando, the high speed rail, and eventually it would come down to Miami, but Rick Scott turned it down.
Isn't that crazy?
That would have employed thousands of people, okay?
Yep.
So don't just look to the federal government for unemployment. We've had Republican governors for 14 years, and they did nothing to employ the people. Rick Scott gave a lot of people pink slips. So
well,
if you're talking about the economy,
you know,
you better look to your own governor who likes to unemploy people.
Yes, and Rick Scott is the worst of the worst. And in 2 years, Nan Rich, former state senator, I believe, is going to be running for the governor's office, and she'll be great.
A strong candidate.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's going on. I want to talk about Mitt Romney's sweatshop in China.
Yeah.
$23 million he invested in global tech, where they made 25 cents and up to a dollar. It was like a prison-type atmosphere.
Yeah, and he talks about that in that 47% tape. If you go to motherjones.com, you can see the whole thing. And he's basically bragging about this sweatshop over in China and all these women who work there and others want to get in there. Well, gee, you know what? Maybe they could have better working conditions and not live in these dorms. Flo from Sunrise, good to hear from you. Nicole Sandler in for Tom Hartman. We'll be right back with more of your calls next.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So taking your calls at 866-987-TOM. Again, I do my show at RadioOrNot.com. I'll be on tomorrow morning, 10 to noon Eastern, and back here in the afternoon in for Tom again. Thanks for hanging with us today. Great.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
It's hard to talk over Leonard Cohen, just so you know, but I will. I'm Nicole Sandler, having a great time in for Tom Hartman today. I really appreciate them asking me to be here. Loving talking to you guys. Tomorrow, I'll be back tomorrow, and we have a great show lined up as well. Senator Sherrod Brown from Ohio will be here. Ari Berman and John Nichols from The Nation. My friend Joel Silberman, who is a media coach, he was on my show this morning, and he works with candidates and on debates and speeches and media presence, and he's fascinating, so maybe he'll give Joe Biden a little bit of advice tomorrow. And we're going to, hopefully talk with Ross Tuttle, who's also from The Nation, coincidentally. They have a big story about the New York City Stop and Frisk program, which I find pretty heinous. A young man had been harassed by the police just one time too many, and he recorded. He had a tape recorder going the last time they did it. And when you hear how he was treated by New York's finest, it's going to turn your stomach. So lots to talk about tomorrow. We got a few more minutes. Big thanks, by the way, to Tom's great staff. Sean Taylor, great working with her again. And Shane Farnan and Danielle, who work with me over at RadioOrNot.com. It's like old home week here. And thanks to you guys for all the help today. All right, we got time for a few more calls. So let's go to Steve in Warwick, Massachusetts, watching on Free Speech TV. Hi, Steve.
All right. Hi, Nikki. All right, I'm basically calling to try and warn all the listeners here about Mitt Romney and stuff, because I lived through his leadership skills.
When he was governor, huh?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Wasn't the big dig?
2005.
Was the big dig under Romney?
All right. Back in 2005, instead of the remnants of Katrina came through Western Mass. And it flooded out, all right, a lot of neighborhoods and communities. And our glorious governor, rather than doing his job and being a leader, he jumped on an airliner and went down to South Carolina to go politicking and then refused to come back until there was a negative article in the Boston Globe. Even the mayors and the leaders of the towns could not get the governor on the phone to talk to him.
I'm not surprised. Look, I think Mitt Romney just wants to be, you know, president. He wants to accomplish what his father couldn't. And he wants to be the first Mormon president. I guess he also wants to go to Missouri and the Mormon Garden of Eden and bring back Jesus, which apparently is what they believe will happen when a Mormon gets in the White House. I don't know. Let's not give him the chance. All right. All right. Patrick in Gary, Indiana, also watching on Free Speech TV. Hi.
Hello.
Hello, that's you.
Yeah, I wanted to talk. They told me to just keep it to one point, so I will. I was going to say, these religious people that have been duped and the voted Republican, man, somebody needs to educate them. These politicians, out of one side of their mouth, they're like pro-life and all this stuff, and then out of the other side of their mouth, they're complicit with all these corporations and taking all this money that are responsible for thousands of deaths, you know? And I just can't understand it. I think if we take the time to educate these people and show them the misery that these people are spreading, they might come back around our side of the table, you know. It's, you know, they're not supposed to judge. God's supposed to judge if they believe in all that stuff, you know. And there they are voting these people in. They're just, you know, selling out the species.
Okay. All right. I hear you loud and clear. I thought he wanted to talk about Jill Stein, but that's okay because we don't need to go there right now. Lynn in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hi.
Hi, Nicole.
What's on your mind today?
Okay. Since you started talking about Bain Capital, I did some research about who owns the media.
Yeah.
And I found out that Bain Capital owns Clear Channel and all the iHeart radio stations.
Yeah, well, Bain Capital bought the controlling interest in Clear Channel, I want to say about 6 years ago or so. You know, look, some of the stations that carry this show are on Clear Channel, and I don't want to say anything bad about them. Just know, you know, a lot of, there's a problem. Actually, the problem with the broadcasting industry started under Bill Clinton. I got to place blame there. Bill Clinton signed into law the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which allowed a company like Clear Channel to buy 1,200 radio stations. Before that, look, in the old days when I first got into radio, one company could own, I think it was 7 AM, 7 FM, and 7 TV stations with no more than one of each in a city. Now they can have, you know, 12 stations in a single market. And because of this, what has happened is massive loss of jobs in this industry. I've got a lot of very nice emails and tweets today, people asking why I'm not on terrestrial radio. Well, you know, it's great that there are outlets that carry Tom and Stephanie and Randy and, you know, the progressive shows that are out there. But so many of these stations don't have any local programming anymore. And even with, you know, like music stations, they don't, you know, they use something called voice tracking where, look, jobs were eliminated. And as much as I'd like to fault Clear Channel and Bain for that, it really goes back to the Telecommunications Act. We need new ownership rules that that limit, I think, this is my opinion purely, that limit the number of stations any company can own, and also require them to have some local programming. The thing that was always so great about radio was that it was immediate, that if something happened in a city, you know, the local radio station was where you could go to get it covered. And now oftentimes there's nobody live on the air. It's a shame. But, you know, who knows what the future will bring. Yes. Yeah, so to answer the question, yeah, Bain Capital owns, is I guess, the owner of Clear Channel these days. I don't think it's been a good investment for them. We'll say that because, well, the whole broadcasting industry suffered really hard under the Bush recession that, you know, is kind of a depression, but that Obama is, you know, getting us out of. How's that for skirting the issue? All right. You're the music. We're just about out of time for today. I've had a great time. Big thanks once again to Tom's wonderful staff and to Tom and Louise Hartman for having me here. We'll do it again tomorrow. I will do my show in the morning at RadioOrNot.com, then head back up to my friend Mindy's studio and talk with Sherrod Brown and a few people from the nation and you as well. As Tom says, tag your it. You know, democracy is not a spectator sport. Thank you for listening. Once again, I'm Nicole Sandler.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.